is now 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, April 4th, 2023 in Belts 105. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Giesel, and myself, Senator Dunbar. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones. Before we begin, I would like to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Community Regional Affairs Recording Secretary, and Jake Wade from the Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today. We have two items of business on today's agenda. First, we will look to the will of the committee for SB 103, Peer Support Counseling Program, by myself, Senator Dunbar. Second, we have a presentation from the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, Girls, and Two-Spirit People Alaska Working Group. Do committee members have any questions before we get started? Not seeing any. So we are on our first order of business, SB 103. To recap, we had an initial hearing, public testimony, and committee discussion last Tuesday on March 28, 2023. An amendment deadline was set for April 3rd, 2023, and we did not receive any amendments. Before looking to the will of the committee, do members have any additional questions about the bill? Not seeing any. Okay. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for considering this bill, and seeing no additional questions, Senator Giesel, may I have a motion?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 103, Work Order 33, LS0565/A-alpha, from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Not seeing any, SB 103 passes from committee. We will now go to a brief at ease to sign the paperwork and get ready for the presentation. Now come back on the record. I want to mention for the record we've been joined by Vice Chair Olson. All right, we will now have a presentation from the Murder and Missing Indigenous Women, Girls, and Two-Spirit Alaska Working Group. So I don't know, we have Kendra Kloster. Let's see, do I have a list of names here? Oh yes, so we have Kendra Kloster, the Co-Director of Law and Policy at Alaska Native Women's Resource Center. We have Kelsey Potvin, Education Outreach Manager at the Alaska Native Justice Center, Emily Edenshaw, President and CEO of the Alaska Native Heritage Center, and Dr. Charlene Apok, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Data for Indigenous Justice. Ms. Kloster, before we begin, would you prefer questions throughout the presentation, or would you like to wait until the end?
If we could wait until the end, that would be great.
Okay, we will endeavor to do so. Although if someone's very insistent, we might pause.
No problem.
But all right. Well, thank you very much. And if you don't mind, please begin the presentation.
Great. Thank you so much. And I just wanted to make sure that you all see the presentation in front of you on the first slide there with all the organizations.
We do. We have it we have it up on the screen, but we also have physical copies for the members because some of the text is a little bit small.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. And we'll just kind of say next slide as we're ready and going through the presentation and hopefully get through all the different tech things, but really appreciate being here today. I'm just going to start with a round of introductions for everybody. As mentioned, we are part of the MMIWG Alaska Working Group. We are five Indigenous-led organizations that have come together. We started back in 2018 of just really understanding that there is a crisis throughout Alaska and really throughout the nation and the world around missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And we've come together in collaboration to see how we can address this issue together in community, within our organizations, with our tribes, organizations all across the state. So before I dive in, I'm Kendra Kloster. I'm the co-director of Law and Policy at the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center. I'm Tlingit Raven Kiksaudi, originally from Wrangell and Juneau in the lands that you are currently on there. Although I am raising my family on the Dena'ina lands in Anchorage. I come to this work, really what we call our heart work, because I do not want to pass this on to my children and to next generations. And so I'm just going to start with that, but I'm going to hand it over to Akpik to do her intro.
Dr.
Akpik, you're on mute.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Koyana, thank you so much for your time and having us today. Uvanga, Charlene, Apak, Nuprak, Siska, Akpik, Chinik, Mugurunga, Selina, Chivik, Mugurunga, Akaga, Sandra, Bibi, Lu, Apak, Ikmaga, Evan, Luklan. So my name is Charlene Apak. My Nuprak name is Akpik. My family is originally from Gullivan and White Mountain. I also reside in Tagayakuk, in Anchorage, Alaska, with my son. And I wear lots of hats related to this work. At Data for Indigenous Justice, I'm the founding executive director as an organization that has formed the database for Alaska on this issue. I also work at Native Movement as the director of gender justice and healing, where we help do community events to organize here. And then I also sit on Ingrid Cumberledge's federal working group as a tribal appointed member from White Mountain. First and foremost, I do this work because of my family. So I am also the daughter of Sandra Bibi Lu Apak, someone in our community whose death was listed as suicide, but many family members believe she was murdered. I'm also the niece of a woman who went missing in the state of California and was declared deceased after never being found. I'm also the cousin to Samantha Koenig, the barista who was kidnapped and murdered in Anchorage. And who later they, of course, found the murderer, the serial killer. So I come to this with lots of different hats, but of most importance as a community member here in Alaska and a mother who is trying to raise a family in a safe way. So thank you for your time, and I'll pass it to Kelsey.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for hosting us today. My name is Kelsey Potovin. I am an education and outreach manager at Alaska Native Justice Center in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm Koyakon Athabaskan. My mom's family is from Native Village of Tanana. I've lived and worked in Anchorage since 2014, and I was raised in Juneau, where you are now. For years, I've worked in Alaska Native nonprofits, and before that, in philanthropy. But thank you for hosting us.
And before we jump in too much on the slides, too, I just want to give thanks for the lands that you are all on, the Akwan and Takukwan there in Juneau, and for us who are on the Dena'ina lands, and just appreciate being on these lands every day and being able to raise my family in this community. For slides, we can scroll through. There's other working group members that were not able to join us today, but just want to recognize the work that they do. Deborah O'Gara, Emily Edenshaw could not join us today. If we go to the next slide too, Alex Cleghorn, Violet Sonsmeyer, and Autumn Cantu. And there's others that have joined us throughout the time as well, and just appreciate everyone that's been a part of this working group, because it takes all of us together to do this.
So hopefully you guys are, can now look at slide 4 about MMIWG2S working group. And I just wanted to share a little bit more about us. I mentioned that we have came together in 2018. It is multiple organizations, including the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center, the Alaska Native Justice Center, Alaska Native Heritage Center, Data for Indigenous Justice, and Native Movement. We do this work in collaboration. We have many different strengths that we work on together, whether it be data, looking at policies and offering kind of recommendations that we're hearing through our communities. We do a lot of healing work. We can't do this work without really connecting with our communities and offering the healing and being part of that. Awareness is also a very big part of our work. And I just want to share that in like one of our last meetings, actually, that we met with the DPS commissioner, you know, he definitely said this was an issue that he didn't know was such a big issue around the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women until he really started taking a look at it and understanding, and especially through the hiring of Ann Sears, who is now the, well, she's left, but she was in the MMIP investigative unit, and now we have two investigators there. But it's really through the education of learning about this issue now, and then we've been able to make more successes, which we'll talk about more later, into really just addressing the number of things that we need to be able to do to hopefully end this crisis and a lot sooner than later, because this has been happening for way too long. But we support each other through this work. We work with our tribes, we work with organizations, and you'll hear more about our work through this time, but I've just really appreciated. We meet weekly and do lots of different events together, support our communities even through resources like toolkits on how to implement different maybe policies within a tribe, or how to hold vigils or different processes that you might need for healing and to uplift, and also to be prepared. And I would like to say if, but it's probably more of a when someone maybe go missing or murdered in their community, so they know at that time what to do and what actions to take. So we do help through a number of different ways through this working group. Next slide, please. The working group, we provide education, we gather information and data, and really working with our policymakers to understand the different strategies that we can do to address this issue that so many Alaskan families are having to deal with on a very regular basis. Through this presentation, we're going to talk a little bit more about the background of the crisis and the things that we are doing to address this. Some of the pictures that you're going to see through it is actually some of our work. We have come to the legislature before, that was pre-COVID. We were able to talk about missing and murdered Indigenous women and the efforts that we were doing then. It's only been expanded from there. We recently were able to partner with the Anchorage Opera and have missing this, the opera about missing and murdered Indigenous women, come into town, which was a very powerful. And hopefully some of you had a chance to see that. And I'm going to go to the next slide, please. As you've probably seen across the nation and in Alaska, what we've seen is the red hand that you see in front of you. This has become a symbol, really, of the growing MMIWG movement. It stands for all of our missing sisters, where our voices have not been heard. It stands for the silence in the media, in law enforcement, and in our policies, and the oppression that's been coming to Alaska Native women and Indigenous people. This is our way of continuing to bring this issue forward and rising up to say no more stolen sisters. And next slide, please, and I'm going to hand it over to Akpik.
Yeah, thank you, Kendra. So there's a lot of intersectional issues that cross with missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirited people. And one of those important issues and things that we like to recognize is boarding schools and the history of boarding schools as structural violence that has very much impacted many Indigenous communities, both internationally in the lower 48 and here in Alaska. And so much of this isn't new. Like, we're beginning to have the information, the data, which we'll talk about, that this has been a history of structural violence. And one of those really important things to recognize, even here in Alaska, is that history of boarding schools and the way that it institutionalized sexual violence into our communities and across especially rural communities, and that we're living with the impacts of that today, and the way that that has spread so prevalent across our communities. So the photo here is from actually Wrangell, and then there's some, probably in your printouts, you can see a little bit closer about those photos. But we do just want to recognize that this is a historical legacy that we are living through today that very much impacts this issue. And I just want to uplift, Emily Edenshaw wasn't able to make it today, but the Alaska Native Heritage Center is doing really good work to address boarding schools and to lead those healing efforts in our community. And we recognize this intersection. So you can go to the next slide. And Kelsey will start sharing some of the data that we know of and that's available.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Ockpick. So I'm going to share a little bit about the data that we have. This first slide here is disproportionality around victimization. And this is something that ANJC, Alaska Native Justice Center, and many of the organizations that are part of the working group track. And, you know, we use this data. We're always having to make a case for the need. In our grant narratives, in different, you know, in applying for different funding sources. And so keep in mind that for our Alaska State population, about 19% of us are Alaska Native or American Indian. And I won't read through all of the statistics here, but you can see that we are disproportionately represented in all types of violence. And when we really look at the data that we collect from various reports and studies, we see that from birth until old age and passing away, Alaska Natives are disproportionately victimized or disproportionately represented in the justice system. So justice-involved individuals. and so next slide, please. This next slide shares a graphic around disproportionality again. This one was put together by the Urban Indian Health Institute, which is out of Seattle, and it's sharing more broadly some of the national rates of victimization. So, you know, people who have experienced being coerced or raped within their lifetime, people who lack permanent housing, the slim number of convictions resulting from being assaulted. So many people are never receiving justice for what happened. And then also there's notes about historical trauma and substance abuse related to their traumatization. So that can put some of the Alaska numbers into context with the broader national trends. Next slide, please. On this slide, these are statistics directly related to the missing and murdered Indigenous people crisis. And we have the 2021 Alaska Baseline Report, which Data for Indigenous Justice put together. And then we also have the Urban Indian Health Institute report that came out a few years prior that was a landmark report in many ways for people in understanding this issue and how it's situated in our lives. NAMIS, which is one of the online databases, comes up with monthly reports. They've recently started tracking. It's always a moving target, but the number of missing people who are Indigenous. And then there's additional statistics here. So our ask for you around these statistics is to look at them and to see that this is a problem. And, you know, we've talked a lot about these and the need for more data, better data, cleaning up the data. So we do have the data that says that this is an issue in our lives, that this is a problem. This is something that is complicated and difficult but we need to do something. And so members of the working group have found different ways, different strategies to improve the data we work with so cases don't get lost. And so we just encourage you as our elected representatives to really look at solutions for helping us make sure that we have the right data, that we have access to the data, and we have suggestions, and we can talk offline in greater detail about these recommendations that have been put into reports like the baseline report. So thank you. Next slide, I'm gonna pass it back.
So next slide, on slide 11. So as we talk about information, all of these figures nationally and in the state of Alaska, we want to always make sure that we're leading with folks and reminding folks that these are real people missing from our lives. These are our relatives. These are people from our communities. These are people who have lost hopes and dreams and potential to contribute to our communities in a positive way, like it's their lost brilliance and their ideas, and that we grieve that. And this beautiful CUSP book, if you haven't seen it, is something that Amber Webb in our community CUPIC made, and it shows the faces, because sometimes as we do move through information and data or policy, it's easy to get lost and then forget that these are real people that we very much love and miss in our communities. And so we just wanted to take time to explicitly acknowledge that. You can go to the next slide. And again, this information, as Data for Indigenous Justice came about doing that work, was a direct ask from our communities. It was people coming together actually at a rally to draw attention to this, where we still weren't having the acknowledgement that this was an issue. And people came to us and said, here's the story and the names of my loved ones. And we gathered that together with their permission. And that began actually the heart of the database. And we were able to put out the first Alaska-specific report. There on the bottom, you'll see the findings, which was put out in 2021, of 229 missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls that we've just been able to document. And I can't underscore enough like how that is such a baseline and just the tip of the iceberg. And also we know how familiar that number of 229 is here in the state, also coinciding with the number of tribes that we have. And when I first did my final pull for this report, like I just had chills that this truly does show how we are all impacted. You can go to the next slide. The other thing that we like to point out is that we go missing in life from our families and our communities. We also are missing in the media. There's a whole lack of coverage from media of Indigenous peoples when this happens. And so media is such an important data source, actually, for us to know what's happening and where people can be involved. And there's been also research done that shows the undercoverage of Indigenous peoples in media and the way that they are portrayed, which you can go to the next slide. Media is a powerful data source, but it's also an important way that narrative is built around this issue. And so oftentimes we may see coverage on a case of someone who's gone missing or murdered, but it's very graphic. It's portrayed in such a, oftentimes a victim-blaming way. And again, the life and the legacy of that person is often missing, and it's often just their death that is covered. And we want to change that narrative and be the ones that are telling our own stories. And of course, you'll see tons of data listed, but I'm filling in the lines of what we're hoping to carry through. And then you can go to the next slide. So we're on 15. And then this is, I'm here with my colleagues and my peers who bring so many talents and skills to advocacy and policy, and my background is in research. And so again, we wanted to bring up how important data is for telling the story that we want told, both from the communities, but also from folks like representatives such as yourselves and communities. This is the chance to say, hey, this is where we were at this year, and this is the way that we address and change that.
So data is a compelling way to show that we are working together on this issue. Plain and simple, though, if we don't have the correct or accurate information to implement change, it's going to be challenging. And so there's lots of recommendations. I give whole presentations just on data and fields and code books and things like that, and I'm happy to answer questions about that or to revisit the support, the report in depth at a later time. But again, we just want to offer some of the information that is available and some of the things that we've been recommending on that front. So you can go to slide 16. And one of those things that we recognize, like Kelsey said at the beginning, is this is enough information to say that, yes, there's an issue. Yes, this is a crisis. And what would be most useful going forward is to have information systems and data systems that serve our communities and agencies, including the state and law enforcement and the justice system, to improve this issue. And again, there's lots of ways that that can be done for better tracking. But again, I just want to share that, and a lot of it is available in the report. And you can go to the next slide, and you'll also see, we mentioned this is a complex issue. Jurisdiction in Alaska, as you know, is very complicated. And so there's a lot of ways that, and although it's complicated, there also means that there's a lot of ways that we can move forward and work together. And so jurisdiction is one of those that we can navigate together and have collaboration, as well as creating synthesis across various agencies and protocols, and then having centralized and digitization of data. So although we have all of this information prepared in these slides that we've gathered together, we also know, as I mentioned, that this is just the tip of the iceberg. Many organizations and state agencies don't have data that is digitized even before 2009. So again, what we're looking at in the scope is just a small part of the issue. So again, these are just nuggets of information that we can unpack later on, but we wanted to just share. And then Kendra will share about some of this information gathering and what that's led to a culmination of successes in our ability to work together.
Thank you, Akpek. And I know we're probably going through this pretty fast with a lot of information, and really each one of us could probably be doing long presentations on all of this, but this will hopefully give you a good kind of overview, and we can always answer more questions. The MMIWG2S successes is the slide that I'm on now. And as I mentioned, we've been doing a lot of work as a working group for the last few years. And so I just wanted to highlight some of the efforts that have been accomplished, although we have a long ways to go. But for our state and local policies, since 2018, we've been working on advocating for MMIP investigators, and we do have two new designated MMIP investigators who have really hit the ground running and doing a lot of work. You see a picture with myself and Akpek and at the top there. And we had a really great meeting with them, and they've been making just a lot of good recommendations and things that can be helpful for them in the future and how to continue working on these cases. And as I mentioned, after having two investigators, they've definitely seen the need for more, which is unfortunate. As notice, we have a backlog of unsolved cases that need to happen. And right now they're working on a lot of the cases, but that's just through the Department of Public Safety. So we also need to be looking at police departments and others that have other cases and even the new cases. But I'll get more into that later. But so the great two new MMIP investigators, that's a really great thing. We have a statewide MMIP council. And so this is the first one for that. That was part of the governor's initiative. And full disclosure, I do sit on that council. So as Akpek, we all wear many kind of different hats. And so that council has put forth their first draft recommendations, and we are going to be continuing to meet. And so you will see more reports, but that our first report has been released. VPSO legislation and funding increased. This is something that we continue to advocate for. Over the years, BPSOs were cut in funding, so now we're still trying to make up really a loss for the cuts. And some of you may have seen some of those reports that were put out, and investigative reports by the ADN, where only 1 in 6 villages were having any kind of law enforcement or a VPSO in their community. So we're appreciative of the funding that has been increased, and also through the legislation that was passed last year with Senator Olson really stewarding that through. So appreciate that. And numerous MMIP Awareness Day proclamations from state and communities across the state. Awareness and healing, very much a part of our work. We hold an annual Heartbeat of the Drums and 5K run and walk. We hold things like self-defense classes, trainings, including IPAWS, and that is the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System that is through FEMA. And also NAMIS databases, which OCPIC talked about. And also federal policies include passage of Savannah's Act, the Not Invisible Act Commission, where the three people listed, Tammy Drew, Michelle Demmer, and Vivian, all sit on all Alaskans that are continuing to work through the NAI Commission. And just as a heads up for folks, that commission is now going across the country in different locations to be having in-person hearings. And in April, they will be in Anchorage. So we will be putting out more information on that as well. And then the VAWA, Violence Against Women Act reauthorization, was also a very important piece. So those were some of the things that we've been able to see successful of addressing the MMIP crisis. Again, as we are not done, that is just tip of the surface of things that needed to be done. So if we go to the next slide, I wanted to get in a little bit more about maybe some recommendations and advocacy for policy that you all can do. And I just want to bring forward that this isn't, the recommendations and policies are coming not just from our working group, but it's really listening to communities. It's hearing what barriers have happened, and then how are ways that we can address that. So this is not just from us, it's from all over. Some of the things that have happened, as far as the legislature, we have had two bills introduced over the years, starting in 2020 and 2022, and we'll hopefully see a bill soon. Again, as those bills may have been introduced, we've actually not had a hearing on any of those bills yet. In past years, we did come to the legislature, I think in 2018 or 2019, to do an overview similar of what we're doing now. So we're hopeful to see bills put in again, and, you know, appreciative of Senator Olson, who put in Senate Bill 211 and working on some other things, that we can get a bill in and get that moving forward. And some of the recommendations will be coming up in the next slide. So I'll go next slide, please. And these are recommendations. We have them broken out between like operating budget items and policies. As we have the MMIP investigators that I mentioned, we need to expand the MMIP investigative unit. The suggestion, when even talking with the DPS commissioner, he's agreed that that unit does need to expand, and looking at adding two more investigators at least. We also are interested in an MMIP statewide attorney housed over a Department of Law. The reason for this is we need to have an attorney that's specific to MMIP that is partnering with our investigators. And so when the investigators are wrapping up cases and needing to bring it to prosecution, that it doesn't not get stuck in the backlog. As mentioned, we are needing more investigators to get through these cases, and the prosecution piece can get held up and probably will get held up. So that's why we need a specific MMIP attorney. Data system improvements. I know OCPIC could expand on this a little bit more, but we don't have data systems that are really talking to each other throughout the organizations, throughout law enforcement. And even some of the data is being collected differently, so they're really not talking to each other. So we need an upgrade in our data systems and making sure that they're talking to each other. And so that's for data collection on criminal justice investigation and prosecutions, which is part of the next one. Mandatory cultural training that needs to be led by Indigenous organizations. I can tell you, I won't get too much into this, but I can tell you some stories about that that I've personally gone through when sitting through the Public Safety Advisory Commission here on the municipality of Anchorage and seeing some of those trainings and really needing those to be updated. And that's something I know that their APD is working on, and we are trying to work with them. But that is needed very much across all law enforcement, and really for anyone. I think it's really important when working with our Indigenous communities that everyone understands. Grant funding for tribal organizations, and this is something that I really talk about in a way of our communities know what they need, and our communities don't all need the same thing. And so this is something where we're looking at how do we support our tribes and our communities to be able to do the things that they need to do, and very much looking at whether it be cultural training or needs to be putting in regulations and toolkits for when people go missing or murdered. We need to have a non-competitive grant funding in order that to support our communities and our tribes. And I do bring this up not just to the state legislature, but to federal, to organizations, for everyone to being part of this. I don't look to just saying it's just the state's responsibility, but it's all of our responsibility. But the state definitely has a piece of that responsibility to ensure that we're supporting our communities. Increased funding for DNA testing. This is something that has come up, especially through the investigation that is needed. And to think about as well as your collection of DNA and then processing the DNA. And this is also something that can solve more than one case. And that has been something that has been come up. So definitely increased supporting for that. And again, I talked about the VPSO. And the last one I'm going to bring up is funding to support our outdated 911 system. And this is something we've talked about numerous times, but there are many communities, actually most of Alaska, if you call 911, you can be rerouted to different communities. And they also don't have a system in Alaska where you can track. So if you're calling from a cell phone, they can't find where you are. And there are stories about this. We've talked about it over the years in our different policy forums and with legislators that we hope to see an updated 911 system, as Alaska has one of the worst in the country. And I know that was a lot. I know it's in your slide, so you have it written down, but I'm going to pass it over to Kelsey to talk through the recommendations for some of the legislative executive branch policy recommendations.
Okay, thank you, Kendra. So there's a little bit of overlap between the operating budget and then these recommendations for the legislative and executive branch policies. Number one is training from Indigenous-led organizations or contractors for all public safety officials. And that is something, I don't want to speak for anyone, but I think there are members of the working group that can help out with doing this. There was also the Fatality Review Commission, and some of the members from our working group were set to participate on that, but there was a leadership change at DPS and that project never got going. That would be, one recommendation that we have. This is something that is it could be teed up and ready to go. So we recommend revisiting that. The next one is establishing annual non-competitive grants for tribes to address MMIP and other public safety issues in their community. And we can't stress enough the non-competitive nature of the grants. I work at a large organization where we have whole staff dedicated to supporting us in the grant administration. But I think, as many of you know, it can be really burdensome if you have a small tribe and one grant or one tribal administrator trying to handle all of the paperwork for a grant. But just having access to a grant system would be revolutionary. Also requiring interagency cooperation. Right now we have guidelines and best practices, and everyone is busy. Everyone is doing their best to try to make Alaska a safe place to grow up in and to live in. And so it's not just one more thing. This is something that can help public safety agencies and law enforcement agencies do their jobs better and keep people safe. We also recommend audits and reporting on law enforcement investigation and mandating NAMIS entry of missing persons. We also recommend reviewing Department of Law procedures for prosecution of cases involving missing or murdered Indigenous people and reviewing case management practices by law enforcement. And also review of investigation, charging decisions, and access to necessary resources for homicides and review of judicial outcomes of homicides. We also recommend establishing a data code book across agencies. And I feel like some of this is already, suggestions are drafted up. They are ready to go to ensure consistency between data collecting and reporting. And these are things as simple as, you know, one database might, you might enter someone's sex and another one you enter gender. And there are only two choices and the other one has multiple choices. And so already it's hard to combine the data. Another suggestion is to improve oversight of investigations and to provide case support for families and communities. Next slide, please. And we'll get back to the providing case support for families and community, but you know, just this slide that's up next, the advocating for change in your community. That's one thing, you know, that we ask that you as individuals go forth and do. We all know that we all deserve to feel safe in our homes and walking around and being in our communities, and that we all matter. So just ensuring that we can be safe, it's just, it's incredibly important and something that should be among our top priorities. And this group, the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women to Girls and Girls to Spirit Working Group, we've been doing, you know, really as individuals, as professionals, all that we can over the last several years to work on this issue. And we can't do it alone. And so there's been some successes, which Kendra outlined, but we really need Alaska to come together and the state of Alaska especially to support this work and to support real change. Next slide, please. So this next slide has a picture of the This Is Why We Wear Red toolbook that Alaska Native Women's Resource Center put together about a year or two ago. And that is a toolkit for communities. And we also have a resource list for the working group, just so people know where to go to look for resources and also what to do when something happens. So the AKWRC toolkit acts as a plan for if something happens in the community, who's going to do what to respond to this. And this is something that communities can do themselves. It's not necessarily law enforcement, but to make sure that families are supported and that the case is, you know, actively being, you know, people are looking for this person and it's not, and so it's just to ensure that something is happening. Is there anything else you'd want to add about resources to the community, Kendra and OCPEC? Okay, I'm going to pass it back then.
Thank you. So this group, as you can see, we've been doing a lot over the last couple of years, and we have the privilege and honor of sharing, and we also know that there are so many others doing this work, both in Alaska and nationally and internationally. We just want to uplift their work as well, and that this matters to so many of us, and that our communities have been doing amazing, and families, individual families, have been really leading this for many years before we had the support of orgs and dedicated time. And that, again, we always invite people into this work and offer that there's a place of belonging for everyone. When we say that there's systemic issues happening in the state and happening in these institutions, it also means that there's an opportunity for systemic solutions, and that we've been working on this day in and day out. It takes a ton of hard work to be able to do this. The families have entrusted us to advocate and to carry these asks forward, and that we invite people in, such as yourselves, to help pick up this work and to do everything you can within your role and position to support us and all of the families. So next slide. And again, this is just our information. Of course, we can share more direct contacts if needed, but these are the orgs that we, again, represent today and that are working on this collaboratively. And just thank you so much for your time and listening, and we'll try to take some Q&A and just appreciate you so much for being here.
Thank you very much. Thank you to all of the presenters. I have a couple of questions, but first, are there any questions from my colleagues? We're going to get started. Yes, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this is for Dr. Uppock, or is it Salmonberry? Uppock, isn't that what Uppock means? Okay. As you look at the funding for MMIP, as you look at 5 years down the road, what do you plan on accomplishing during this period of time as you're asking for these funds? Are you trying to find whatever is left of, or find the missing and murdered people that are there so the family can have closure? Or is more of the emphasis going to be on trying to prevent or give, you know, young ladies, I've got two girls who are very young, and to make sure that they have a way to recognize a threat and recognize what could happen to them. So I don't know where your emphasis is going to be on. That's what my question is.
Yeah, thank you so much. So in some of our other presentations, sometimes people ask, like, what is your strategy? What are you, you know, for this working group? And we want justice on every front. And so that does mean that we do prevention work. For example, this month, the Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we hold a self-defense seminar. We put out lots of information and resources on socials to contribute to the prevention side. And yes, we also want to make sure that the families have closure to their cases and that those are being actively worked on. Specifically for funding, we have, going back to that other slide of the asks of budget line items, we have put forward these specific asks to the legislator. And part of those funding items, Kendra could probably speak to better, but one of the things that we've heard is, you know, these, you gotta get these budget things in early, you gotta get them in, but we've also proposed them multiple years in a row. So some of these have been things that we've been advocating for and seeking funding in the budget for numerous years. But to answer your question, it's all of the above. And this group, again, is comprised of multiple organizations who have many skill sets. And then we reach out to folks like you to help identify those areas where you fits in with the roles and the asks of what you can do to help, because we need everybody together. We need law enforcement. We do need BPSOs. We need advocates. We need people doing prevention. So all of the above. And then we have specific budget things for this group that, again, is on one of the slides, and Kendra can add on to that if you'd like.
Do you have a follow-up, Senator Olson?
No, I haven't.
Okay, thank you. I have a question. I know that Ms. Edenshaw couldn't be here today, unfortunately. I think she has been doing a lot of work on boarding schools. But I was wondering if anyone could speak a little bit more to that issue. I know it's been one where there's been a lot of work done, particularly in the last 2 years. And I think there's a perception by some in Alaska that it wasn't really an issue here as much as in the lower 48. And a lot of the work has been sort of education around that. And so, again, she's not here, but is there anyone that could speak a little more to that and to maybe some of the work that's been done in that area?
I know Emily isn't here, but I could offer that I know that there was actually just a news article put out where she and her team and her Indigenous researcher at the Heritage Center were interviewed, and that they have been submitting publications that hopefully are available soon. So I was like, I don't know if Kelsey and Kendra, you want to say anything more about that effort.
My recommendation, to be honest, would be to, if you have an opportunity, to bring Emily back to do a specific presentation just on boarding schools, because I think that there is a lot of information around boarding schools that could take up an entire presentation, I know, through all the work that she's been doing, but I can tell you that it is an issue here in Alaska. We have had, through communities all throughout Alaska, of where our kids were taken and put into boarding schools across the state. And you saw a picture on one of them where Wrangell has a boarding school there. Did. And so there's going to be a lot of information that's coming out, but we still have that same problem in Alaska where our kids were removed from our communities and we're not allowed to speak languages, to speak our native languages, where they were not treated fairly. And a lot of harm was done to our communities through the boarding schools and this issues that we are as communities are still facing today. And continue to work on healing. And I would just highly suggest that you have a more in-depth presentation than I think I'd feel comfortable just talking off the cuff of going off right now. There's a lot to uncover there.
I think the takeaway, though, of making this connection to boarding schools and the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous relatives is the structural violence and a historical legacy in our communities. I think, like, that's the biggest part, is recognizing that there are historical practices that have been institutionalized that we are still dealing with the impacts of today.
Thank you, Dr. Akbar. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much for this presentation. It was really valuable, and I appreciate all the work that you're doing. But I have a question. So I think that most of us are familiar with the ABC series, Alaska Daily. So I'm wondering how you feel about that. Is it valuable? Is it helpful in your mission? Or is it exploitation? I'm just really, really curious to get your viewpoint on that show that's so popular. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Really interesting question.
Yeah, thank you so much, especially as we had slides on media. So Vera and the writers are an Indigenous team, and they came to us for feedback before that was produced and, of course, wanted to be really cognizant of how that story is told. So I'm really proud of our Alaska Native writers who have been putting that forward to raise awareness at a bigger level through the use of media. And we wanted to make sure some of the folks in this group, like Deborah O'Gara and Michelle Demmer and others, also helped provide talking points to Hillary Swank so that she would know, like, so much advocacy is being done on this issue. I've specifically met with the writers to talk about data on that show as well. So on the background, we have been trying to give feedback about some of the things that we're seeing here on the front lines with the use of media. And I do think it's been helpful to have folks raise awareness. One of the things that we have heard about being mindful of or having a critical thought around is making sure that the narrative isn't always that there's, quote, white saviors in media, but we, again, I think that that show has had a positive impact in people feeling like their stories and their families are present in a larger media setting.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing your response. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ray Jackson. I also want to acknowledge we actually have Commissioner of Department of Public Safety, Jim Cockrell, is here. Thank you for being here. And he came in early in the presentation. I just didn't have a chance to acknowledge him. So glad to have him here in the room with us. Are there any other questions for our presenters? I'm not seeing any. Do you have any closing thoughts, anyone?
This is Kendra. I just want to say gunashish hawa. I really appreciate you all listening and taking a look at our presentation, taking a look at the recommendations that we have offered here. And please feel free to reach out to any of us. Thank you, Commissioner, for also going and attending the hearing. I know you've been at multiple of them. And I also recommend for the committee, if you have any questions for the Commissioner, not to put you on the spot, but I have appreciated being able to work and meet with Commissioner Cockrell, and we have had a lot of meetings and exchange. He's listened to the recommendations we brought forward, and he's brought forward some of his own. And so he's really been able to listen and work with us. And so I just want to put out that appreciation, and I hope that you all will take an opportunity to talk with him about specifically about some of the things like the MMIP investigators, and even invite the investigators there and talk with the commissioner through the work that they're doing. Because as I said, as you dig into this work, you really start to, your eyes begin to open of understanding. If you haven't worked on missing, murdered Indigenous women before, you will start to see that this is a crisis that's been happening in our communities for unfortunately years and generations. And there's not many friends within the Indigenous community that I don't know that is not personally touched by this issue. This is our heart work, because this is our families, these are our friends, these are our relatives. And as I mentioned, this is not an issue, a crisis that we want to pass on to our future generations. I too have a daughter and two sons, and I want them to ensure that they're safe, and same with all of their peers. So we take this work very seriously, and we hope that we can work with you to just move this forward and to work on our public safety across Alaska.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Kloster, Dr. Akpik, and Ms. Potvin. Really appreciate your presentation today. And I think we probably will, so long as I'm the chairman here, continue to do work in this committee on this issue when we see the opportunity. So thank you again for being here. Are there any other closing thoughts from committee members? Okay, with that, thank you everyone for a productive hearing. The time is, 2:26, and this hearing of the Senate Community Regional Affairs Committee is now adjourned.